NRA-TV with Cam Edwards.
I don't see banning assault weapons, right? I don't think that hurts in the deer stand.
Well, the Second Amendment isn't about deer stands now, is it? Good Tuesday to you. Thank you so much for tuning in to another edition of Cam and Company right here on NRA-TV. Cam Edwards, your host. It will regulate a militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That was Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar, who was the latest of, again, what are we up to now? Like 94 Democratic presidential candidates. Bernie Sanders just declared today, so I think that makes like the 16th self-proclaimed socialist to announce he's running for president. Amy Klobuchar, the latest to appear on CNN, a town hall last night, and one of the things that she was asked about was her view on the Second Amendment. I want you to listen to this, because she's trying to sound moderate. She comes off sounding like somebody who doesn't understand what the Second Amendment is all about. Listen to this.
Like New Hampshire, Minnesota is a state that values the outdoors. We value hunting and fishing. And so I come at it from a little different place than some of my colleagues that are running for this office, in that I always look at every proposal and say, would this hurt my Uncle Dick in the deer stand? And I would say that these common sense proposals in front of us do not. I don't see banning assault weapons, right? I don't think that hurts in the deer stand.
All right. So first of all, by the way, I do know people who hunt with ARs. I'm sure that you do as well. I don't know if Senator Klobuchar's Uncle Dick hunts with an AR. I don't even know if Senator Klobuchar actually has an Uncle Dick. I don't know. And I don't know if he, you know, gets up in the deer stand every year. I don't really care, because the Second Amendment is not about hunting. Right. As a matter of fact, don't take my word for it, Senator. Go and read the Heller decision, which was, decided in 2008. Supreme Court made it very explicit that the Second Amendment protects the individual right to keep and bear arms, and the core purpose of that individual right is self-defense. I love hunting. I support hunting. But that's not what our right to keep and bear arms is all about. That's not why Americans in 1791, or even before 1791, let's say after the Constitution was even presented to the American people said, time out. We don't want to ratify this yet. We're a little concerned here. We want some explicit protections for our individual rights. And they didn't say we want to go squirrel hunting. They didn't say we want to make sure that we can get that big buck. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And Senator Klobuchar, well, she really does want to infringe on those rights. She wants to, in the name of common sense gun safety legislation, ban firearms that are owned by millions of Americans today. She wants to criminalize the possession of magazines, of which there are tens of millions in the United States. And in her common sense proposal, she makes no mention of how these laws would be enforced. She makes no mention of how many Americans she would like to see imprisoned if they don't follow that law. Makes no mention of how this might comport with, you know, criminal justice reform, which is all about taking nonviolent criminals out of prison and putting them back on the streets. Now she wants a whole new class of nonviolent criminals that she can put behind bars, right alongside each and every one of the Democratic candidates for president. This is the disarmament primary, and we are seeing every evidence of that with every new candidate that comes to the fold. Now, in Pennsylvania, we're watching at the local level. We've been watching this for about a month or so now. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, city council there still debating whether or not they're going to put these local gun control laws on the books in violation of Pennsylvania's firearm preemption law. They had a public hearing, what was it, a couple weeks ago? Packed house, hundreds of individuals, most of them in opposition, showing up at that Pittsburgh City Council meeting. And the Pittsburgh City Council was supposed to vote on this last week. They didn't. They've delayed it. The mayor, Bill Peduto, you know, still says, come and arrest me if you're, afraid of these gun laws. But yet they're not putting them on the books yet. They are going back and trying to amend this. They're trying to make it work. Meanwhile, across the state of Pennsylvania and Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Inquirer had an editorial today talking about how they want to see the Philadelphia City Council come to the support of the Pittsburgh City Council and pass their own local unenforceable gun control laws. Yeah, city council and the mayor should stand with Pittsburgh. That means enacting the same gun control package that Pittsburgh is introducing and sign it into law, even if it only becomes a symbolic gesture. It sends a strong message that these state's two biggest cities are committed to protecting the lives of the residents. I'm trying really hard not to curse here because this is family friendly, but help me out with this. How does a symbolic gesture, a self-described symbolic gesture, show your commitment to serious action? Because to me, it shows a commitment to symbolic gestures, not to actual serious action. And look, we've seen this nonsense from political leaders in Pittsburgh and Philadelphia for a number of years. I remember when we first started Camet Company well over a decade ago, the then mayor of Philadelphia, Mayor Street, was convinced that the rising murder rate in Philadelphia was because of the number of concealed carry holders there in that city. And so he basically de-staffed the licensing division, and nobody could get concealed carry licenses. Now, reporters actually called him out and said, well, how many people arrested for homicide or even a violent crime have been concealed carry holders? He couldn't say. But he was absolutely willing to make legal, law-abiding gun owners the scapegoats for the violent crime in Philadelphia, just as the mayor is doing in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania right now. Both of these cities, if they wanted to, they could get tough on violent criminals. Their police commanders could direct detectives and even the cops on the street to identify the most violent gangs and the most violent offenders within that most violent gang, and they could start right there. Again, we know, thanks to FBI and criminologists, that a very small portion of individuals in any given city commit a disproportionate amount of violent crime. So if you actually really want to impact violent crime, you start with those prime offenders, and then you work your way out. But again, it's not about fighting crime. It's about fighting gun ownership, which is why they start with the legal, law-abiding gun owners and then maybe work their way in to the criminals. Anyway, we'll be following what's going on in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I wish I could tell you when this final vote is coming, but I'm not sure the city council knows at this point. Now, speaking of police, by the way, police in Chicago, they've been very busy investigating the Jussie Smollett case. There are so many new twists and turns. I can't even begin to try to keep you caught up on this. But I have to say, I was really struck by something the other day. Brian Stelter from CNN, the media correspondent for CNN, said perhaps the question was not tough enough when Smollett appeared on Good Morning America, but ultimately this is not about the media or politicians or activists or any of the other people that might have been fooled. It's about Jussie. And a lot of other media types, oh yeah, absolutely, that's right. And yet, when a violent crime is committed, when a tragedy occurs, what we saw in Aurora, Illinois on Friday of last week, these very same members of the media, they are so quick to proclaim that this is your fault, right? This is the NRA's fault. This is the fault of everybody but the actual perpetrator of that violent crime. They are so quick to cast blame all across society, but when it comes to their own failures, they're not willing to look themselves in the mirror. They're certainly not willing to look you and I in the eye. It's so unbelievable. You know, Laura Logan, CBS reporter, actually did a interview recently where she talked about, as a journalist herself, seeing this bias grow worse and worse within her own profession. Take a listen.
But in this country, 85% of journalists are registered Democrats. So that's just a fact. Right? No one's registering Democrat when they're really a Republican. Although the media has always been, historically, always been left-leaning, we've abandoned our pretense, or at least the effort, to be objective today. The former executive editor of the New York Times has a book coming out, Jill Abramson, and she says we would do, I don't know, dozens of stories about Trump every single day, and every single one of them was negative. She said, we have become the anti-Trump paper of record. Well, that's not our job. That's a political position. That means we've become political activists, in a sense, and some could argue propagandists.
Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, witness the cooing and the ooing and the aahing by the press corps when Kamala Harris went shopping this past weekend. I want to bring in right now our friend from the Media Research Center, Mr. Tim Graham, is with us. Tim, how are you, sir?
Good.
Excellent. I assume that you've got a cot there at the Media Research Center. You're sleeping there 24 hours a day because, you know, things are just things are so stupid right now within the media. It is clear to, I think, every member of the media's audience that they are refusing to acknowledge their own fault here in their coverage of the Jussie Smollett case, as well as what I just mentioned here, I think just the embarrassing reporting, the embarrassing coverage by political correspondents, you know, following Kamala Harris around and, ooh, try on this jacket, try on that jacket. You know, they are acting more like sycophantic fans of these candidates than they are, you know, fact checkers and bulldogs and you know, folks who are willing to get the answers out of these politicians. They're fans of all of these candidates running for office right now.
That's exactly why when they get this in this period of high dudgeon and say, you need journalists on that wall. We are just so important. We need to get the truth out. And then, yeah, when they completely mess up, you say, this isn't about the media. I very much like what you said. You remember with David Hogg, got on CNN and said the NRA a bunch of child murderers, and the CNN anchor goes, okay, yeah. There's no fact-checking. There's no facts first at CNN. And so, yes, they in particular should be the last people to try to say, don't blame us for Jussie Smollett. I mean, the reality is we counted 157 minutes just on ABC and CBS and NBC of Jussie coverage. Some of that now, about a third of it is since the story started going bad. But there's 100 minutes of them promoting this story. And in particular, the one that just sticks out and stinks out is the Robin Roberts interview with Smollett, where she wouldn't use the word alleged. And she would ask him questions like, you know, how will it feel if you never find the attackers? Oh, he knows who the attackers are. I mean,
and even worse, since that interview, Tim, we've now learned. I mean, I heard, I saw a story earlier today where there are some folks within ABC saying, well, we had our suspicions about this story. Okay, then why did none of those suspicions ever make it to air? Why was this a puff piece of an interview as opposed to, hey, Jussie, you know, listen, it sounds awful what allegedly happened to you, but we've got some questions here. There wasn't even any of that, right?
There wasn't really anything skeptical. The whole thing was, how are you feeling? How are you dealing with this? Why are you pissed? Because nobody believes me. Well, this is where, yes, again, you could do this interview in a sensitive way that still had some skeptical questions in it that would just simply say, well, we heard you had a broken rib. You didn't end up having a broken rib. What about that? Just questions about, well, it's not on camera. Can you understand why, when this isn't on camera anywhere, that people would get skeptical? Or you would say questions like, geez, you're sort of a big star. You're kind of a big deal. Why aren't you sending out the help to get your Subway sandwich? You know, I mean, just natural questions.
Yeah.
Don't, you're a liar.
Right. But do, look, these are the normal questions that, you know, anybody following the story asked, right? They asked on Facebook. They asked on Twitter. Well, this doesn't pass the smell test. This is just weird to me. I don't understand. And yet none of those questions were asked by the supposed professional journalists, Tim, which begs the question, does the media suck so bad at its job now? Is it abdicated its responsibility as journalists to the point that now the audience could actually do a better job than the so-called professionals?
Oh, on this story, yes. And I think that's where, as you suggest, I think the first thing you would say to him would, if you're going to reflect what the audience would be asking him, you would say, so you're trying to tell us that 2:00 in the morning, there's two guys wandering the streets of liberal Chicago carrying a noose and a bottle of bleach. Really? You know, that's not what they asked. So, look, we have two standards. If you're on the right side of the politically correct divide, you get the soft fawning coverage. If you're a conservative Republican, you get the third and the fourth degree. That's what you have. This is what everybody can see. They can look at the kind of aggression the media apply to Trump, and they can all remember the kind of coverage that Barack Obama got, where they were all delighted that he was going out for hamburgers with Joe Biden.
I'm just trying to think of what the media's reaction would be to a hymn for Donald Trump being sung by school children. Do you remember that? I think this was before Barack Obama was elected president, but there was the choir singing a hymn to Barack Obama, and the media loved it. Oh, look at those cute kids. I mean, they would have a meltdown if the same thing happened for Donald Trump. You're absolutely right. There is a glaring double standard. It's one that the media is certainly willing to ignore. You talk about the difference between covering Democrats and Republicans. The one thing that I would add is that in addition to the soft selling of any sort of, scandal on the left, you also get the Republican spouts, right? Mm-hmm. That you get that meme. Any sort of criticism, coming towards the left from the right is pouncing or Republicans seizing on this. It's never actually a legitimate complaint or a legitimate line of questioning. It's always somehow unfair what the Republicans or what the right are saying and questioning.
Well, and let's say, look, Republicans pouncing on something, they would say, well, that's factual. But what you're doing when you write those headlines or those lead-ins to your story is you're saying, I'm not a Republican. Because when Democrats pounce on something, do they say Democrats pounce? Or do they just simply say, President Trump looks like a Russian spy today? This is the other thing, is that they would all run around and say in hushed tones that the president may be an agent of a foreign power. Can you imagine how they would treat that if you came on television and said, we believe Barack Obama is a tool of a foreign power? They would have said you were cuckoo. Mm-hmm. And that's the
absolutely
difference.
Tim Graham with the Media Research Center. Listen, buddy, I appreciate you coming on the program. It's so good talking with you. And get some sleep. Go home and sleep at home tonight. All right? The couch and the cot in the office can wait. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you. Tim Graham joins on the program. By the way, I did a quick search just now. Democrats pounce. I found one story from Politico, February 16th. Dems pounce on Trump's national emergency declaration. That was it. That's the only one. Yeah. Democrats don't pounce. That's left for Republicans. Speaking of the media and the abysmal job they're doing, did you know that Larry King is still on TV? Yeah. Former CNN host. He was interviewing John Walsh, of America's Most Wanted, not long ago. I think this is on Aura TV. I'm not sure where you get that, if that's like with antennas or satellite dishes or maybe passenger pigeon. I don't know how you get it. But anyway, the two were talking about guns recently, and I watched this. I got to tell you, this is the clip's about a minute long. It made my head hurt just trying to think about correcting the record for all of these misstatements. I want your head to hurt a little bit, too. So get ready. Pop some ibuprofen and take a look at Larry King and John Walsh talking about your right to keep and bear arms.
Are you an advocate of gun control with all you see with schools?
Very much so.
How could anyone be against? How does the NRA have all this clout?
They're not a lobby on Capitol Hill. They're a gun manufacturing rep with a lot of money and a lot of power. I hunt. I own shotguns. I own pistols. I'm an expert shot. I've been to every gun school you can name. I am for background checks just like the cops are. This is the only first world country that you can be a paranoid schizophrenic and walk into a gun show and say, I'm John Walsh. I'm going to kill 100 people tomorrow. And they go, hey, let's have your driver's license. Oh, you never were convicted of a felony? Here's your AK-47. And that 80% of those school shootings were by people mentally ill that everyone identified in the community, the Sandy Hook guy, the shooting in Florida, and they still were able to get guns.
Why is the AK-47 allowed anywhere?
No. We don't need automatic weapons. It's insane. It's a killing machine. It was those guns, AR-15s, AKs are to kill people.
Again, I don't even know where to begin, but let's maybe start at the end and work our way back. So the AR-15, the AK-47, killing machines. According to the FBI, there were less than 300 homicides involving rifles of all kinds last year. So if these firearms are quote unquote killing machines, they're doing a really bad job. And the owners are doing a really bad job because that's not what they're used for by the millions of Americans who lawfully and legally possess them. By the way, speaking of, John Walsh talked about, listen, I own shotguns. I own pistols. John, do you hunt with your pistol? Because you have to know that there are plenty of gun control advocates who don't think that you should be able to own a pistol. As a matter of fact, there were gun control advocates who banned ownership of pistols in Washington, D.C. from 1976 to 2008, banned the possession of handguns in Chicago from 1982 to 2010. And there are gun control advocates today who want to restrict you, John, from taking that pistol out of your home to protect yourself on the street. Again, this whole idea of, oh, and by the way, the notion about the gun shows where you can walk in and, I'm a schizophrenic, and then you can pass a background check and you can get your gun. What on earth is he even talking about? More importantly, what does he think the law should be? What does he think the law should be so that individuals who are not prohibited person, who have never been adjudicated mentally defective, who have no felony convictions, on what basis should they be denied the right to purchase a firearm? By the way, no one's going up to somebody and saying, hey, by the way, I'm extremely mentally ill, sell me a gun. So what does that denial system look like for John Walsh? Is it just basically everybody gets denied a gun, and then if John thinks you should have one, you can get one? I don't understand this. But I got to tell you, there was not one workable proposal offered by either Larry King or John Walsh. Nothing. Not even, honestly, there weren't even any facts offered by Larry King and John Walsh. But that's what passes. That is what passes for a quote-unquote intelligent conversation about firearms on TV these days, which is why I'm glad we have NRA TV right here for you to watch. All right, Oregon. We've been watching a number of bad bills pop up in the Oregon legislature. There is an anti-gun majority. You got an anti-gun governor. And students across the state of Oregon were at the state capitol recently talking about a proposal that they've put together that would require a permit to purchase a firearm. In addition to the background check, you'd have to go through additional screening. You could only own 20 rounds of ammunition at any given time. You could own no magazines greater than 5 rounds. I don't even know how they're going to get to this. And this proposal could actually come up for a vote in Oregon, again, despite the fact that no supporter could actually tell anybody how this would supposed to work, how this would be enforced if it actually became a law in the state of Oregon. Thankfully, there are some folks expressing some skepticism about this, including one state senator in the state of Oregon. Take a listen.
I think sometimes as a society, we get into the mindset of this is a big deal, do something and do something now, even if it's not the right thing, or even if it's not thought out, or even if it's not going to work. We just got to do something.
That's State Representative Sherry Springer, and we'll, again, keep our eyes on this legislation in Oregon because it could start moving here very soon. We started the program today talking about one of the latest presidential candidates, Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota. Michael Bloomberg, he's not a declared candidate. He's you know, testing the wind and weighing the waters, and maybe he's going to, hop in this presidential race. If not, he's prepared to spend $500 million helping out whoever does get the Democratic nomination. Todd Shepard over at the Washington Free Beacon notes that if you want to take a look at some of the records from when Michael Bloomberg was the mayor of New York, you are out of luck. He joins us on the program right now to talk about it. Todd, how are you, sir?
I am doing great. Thanks so much for having me on.
Absolutely. So this is information that should be publicly available, but it's not. What's going on?
Well, I mean, and this is a part of my reporting that I had to source through other reports, and some of which go back many years. But yeah, I mean, basically the way you think of it is when a mayor leaves that office in New York City, essentially they're supposed to take all of their documents and basically hand them right over to the city archives. Now, obviously, the city archives doesn't just turn right around the next day and make them available. There's some cataloging that has to be done. Occasionally, there are things that have to be withheld because of maybe a legal privilege here, you know, attorney-client privilege, something like that. But look, we can just compare what Michael Bloomberg has available at the archives and what other mayors have, and we know there's an incredible shortage there. Also, we know that Michael Bloomberg used his own personal email address and servers. And most of his correspondence will likely never end up at the archives. And that's certainly a significant difference between him and all of the other mayors of New York City.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, in a primary that supposedly is all about transparency, Bloomberg, I think, already has a couple of knocks against him. I don't think that billionaires are going to get a typically warm reception in the Democratic Party this year. But again, this idea of nannyism combined with secrecy that, you know, the rules apply to everybody but me. I don't even know how well that's going to play among the Democratic base in the primary.
Right. And look, I think to go back to some of the conversations you were having 10 minutes ago about some of the coverage in the Smollett case. Look, I'm interested to see if there are elements of the media, let's say the New York Times. I think the New York Times ought to have a great interest in having as much material from the Bloomberg mayoral tenure available as possible. And so you're right that the base, those voters, may not care. But this kind of transparency ought to be the bailiwick of media institutions like the New York Times and so on. Look, I reference in my report today, I talk about a report from the Chicago Tribune, where in 2006, they were very interested in whether or not there had been proper transparency from the Giuliani administration. And they were wondering that specifically because in 2006, Giuliani was talked about as a candidate in 2008. So we should have that same sort of transparency right now on Michael Bloomberg, and we don't have it.
Absolutely. Todd, thank you so much for coming on the program. I look forward to talking to you again very soon, and I appreciate your coverage on this. Let's get to our hero of the day, deal of the day, good guy as well. Hero of the day from Pennsylvania, WFMZ, Allentown, Pennsylvania. Antonio Santiago was on his way to a friend's house over the weekend when he was approached by two guys, came up to his car, pointed a gun at his face. That's when Antonio, who's a concealed carry holder, drew his own legally carried firearm and shot one of those would-be attackers. Shane Gusnacker was one of those would-be robbers. He was killed by Santiago. Police investigating this. They've looked at two additional suspects. They say Santiago not facing any charges because he acted in self-defense. Our deal of the day, I tell you what, I'm going to skip our deal today. I want to go back to this tomorrow because I want you to hear this. And it's just going to take some time. But let's get to our good guy of the day, brought to you by our friends at Odor Crusher before we have to say goodbye to you. WWL, a good Samaritan in New Orleans, saving a police officer from his crushed police cruiser. Take a listen to this.
When I ran towards the car and just seeing how mangled it was, my first thought that if that person survived at all, they're going to be hurt pretty bad. Because you don't know if it's going to spread. You don't know if it's going to get worse. You don't know if the car is going to explode.
You know, having had my car catch on fire at one point in time, I know how fast that can actually happen and how quickly those things can become engulfed in flames. So to be in the right place at the right time and willing and able to come to the aid of that New Orleans police officer, we thank you, sir, for being one of the many, many good guys out there. That's going to do it for this edition of Cam and Company. Stick around. Relentless with Dana Lash is coming up next right here on NRA TV.